Rastax.
Good afternoon, David.
Hey, how are you?
Man, I trying to fight this thing here. I trying to do the necessary things. Buddy was on the phone a long time, and this is one time that I really had the patience, because I like the contributions that these people making, especially the last gentleman that called. Right? I really feel pleased to see that we got people that ready and able to speak the mind and speak it clearly. What I call about today, though, David, yesterday, even I was walking, coming out of Blackmon Field, and this guy, let me call him John, he mounted the hill with two big bags of groceries. I know he's on his way to carry them for his ailing mother. He put them down and he turned to me. He said, called me by name. He said, look, you know, I was shot right here 4 years ago. I almost lost my life. You know, up to now, they put a pole here for people to see. I don't understand what is going on at all. He said, look at that pole down at the bottom. This is the pole now, button and bounding Princess Royal and Blackmon Field, rotting down from the bottom and leaning over to the other side of the road. And up to today, we can't get our representatives to understand.
So he wants a poll so that he could see who shot him?
Ellis, this is since 2006. I've been calling all the time for polls up that road for the people to see. But this pole at the bottom, this shows light onto Princess Royal, not the Blackmon Field, that is falling over in the road.
I'm in agreement with trying to get the light and stuff in the area, but you know full well that people shoot people in broad daylight around here. When they're ready for you, light or no light, they shoot you.
That is one side of looking at it, David.
But I agree that there are other reasons why you need a light in the neighborhood. So you wrote to the people at Light and Power on this?
Listen, I spoke to people at Light and Power since 2007.
What happened? What they told you?
They told me that all have to be done is that the representatives send the numbers of the polls closest to it, and the government is paid for the lights.
This so what happened? The representative didn't do anything? Why is that? You wrote the representative, or you and the representative don't speak?
The former representative, I spoke to him about it, which was Hamilton Lashley. Now this representative is there for the last, how much years, 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, right? You putting out these things on the radio because you can't get in contact with her at all. At no time at all, you have to be in a chat. And all these problems that...
You tried to make contact with her?
Yes. The last time was since February last year.
And failed?
Her response was, will do.
Will do,
okay.
That she
will contact me.
Okay, but she hasn't contacted you yet?
Up to now.
Well, let this be a gentle reminder to her that you are still reaching out to her. More importantly, to reach out to the Light and Power to see if something can be done about the problem.
Because it's
not about you. The leaning pole in particular.
The leaning pole. But the light has to be done by her.
But Light and Power, I suppose...
She has to apply to them for the light.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, David.
All right. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good afternoon, David.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Listen, I want to start a discussion with you about reparations.
Okay.
And I want to approach it from this direction. I think that what Nelson Mandela did in South Africa, and we had a lot of time to look at it, he was criticized somewhat, was the right approach. And so I want to look at it from that angle.
You're talking about reparations or reconciliation?
No, I'm talking about reparations.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Reconciliation will come in the discussion based on how I'm looking at it. And I'm putting it out in the public so that people can pick it apart and see whether it makes sense or not.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, I think some people have come up with a figure, but this is my part of my reasoning, in that, yes, there's information in the history books, but there's also hidden information that the slave owners and whoever organized it over the years, over the 400 or 500 years, have. that I believe is important for us as a people to know and to understand and to be able to move forward. Now, the evidence has shown that when you have a man over a barrel, it don't necessarily mean that you will get the information. United States government tried that with after 9/11 through you know, their programs of torture and stuff like that, and it's proven that they were not able to get all the information necessary. So torturing a man don't necessarily mean you're going to get information. But truly means that Nelson Mandela used, they were able to come up, and you know, he said, you come up and say what's happened, because it's important for us to know, to grieve, and to move on. And I think that the stories that are involved in slavery are much more important to us as a people than money. And one of my reasons for, I'm not saying money is not important, but the truth is that, for argument's sake, let's say that
you have a whole afternoon to talk about this, so talk to me.
I know.
To cut to the chase on reparations, what are you asking for in this regard?
I'm asking for information. I'm asking for the stories, which I feel is more important than
from whom? Who's to get the stories to you?
From the families of the slave owners and people behind slavery and all the information that some of them might have had that is hidden. Because, again, I'm going to say, I know I don't have all these numbers, I'm saying it's just got to just, let's say that we said it was that we needed $20 million. Okay? They could say, no problem, we give you the $20 million. But now, remembering that a lot of stuff is not produced in our region. And so they could say, okay, we give you $20 million. But now, steel now is worth, when it was $100 a ton, it's now $350 a ton. What's going to happen to the money? We're back to square one. And I believe that the stories are more important and have more value to us, because we want to know the system of how it was set up.
Well, that's a view. Let me say to you that people have to live today. And for me, we have to look at how disadvantageous the world order is to countries like ours and to countries that have had slaves as a major part of their upkeep over the years. The call for reparations is one thing, but what is even more important is to fix the way things are done in such a way that we can feel as though we are given a chance in a world that is very hostile. As you look at the COVID situation right now, you have a situation where the developed countries are fighting among themselves for the available vaccines. The other countries now have to scramble and are disadvantaged. No amount of reparations will address that particular problem. We have to look at how they have disadvantaged us in trade. We have to look at how they have disadvantaged us in terms of the international financial sector, a sector that in this current environment, we really ought to be hearing more about that and what is going to be done. But beyond hearing about what we are doing, we need to be pushing for a new world order in this regard, because the countries that are led by people who were slaves are still being treated in a manner that is disadvantageous. And therefore, a narrow focus on reparations to me is not enough.
But this is why I am saying that we need the stories, just like how Nelson Mandela said, tell us what you did and let us move forward.
Your stories alone is more important than the money. Your stories alone won't do it for us, my friend.
No, but I'm saying it's not about the stories alone, David. David, in the stories come the information that is necessary.
Okay.
There are a lot of things that are done, that have been done, that somehow still have a psychological hold on us as a people. And we need to understand that during slavery, at the time, it was not illegal. You could say it was immoral, it was inhumane, all these kind of things. it was not illegal. It was not illegal.
You're going to come back. You're going to have to come back later to have a fuller discussion on that, because time is not on our side to take it any further.
Okay,
today.
No problem, David.
Thanks very much for calling, though. Down to brass tacks.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah. I have a question here for you. It may be foolish or simple, but I would like to know, ask any one of the doctors or anybody, if they ever take a sample from the black sky and the white sky that dropping down. And let us know, because this thing is going very fast. Because everybody believe that somebody come in and bring a thing or something. But it's going fast, because it get to the head of the fountain now. So, to know if they take any test from the sky. You see, like when the volcano come here, I put down something and get some of the volcano thing and put it, I had it in a vial, but I don't know what I do with it.
I hope it don't erupt in your bedroom. Look, somebody's responding to the nurse who spoke to me earlier and is questioning what she said. It said that the board of the QH came into effect in 2005, and the nurse said she didn't sign on yet. She said that she was working there up to last year and is also medically unfit. So that person is questioning what is really the truth here. I mean, if you didn't sign on, how then could you be in a situation to be working with the Queen Elizabeth Hospital up to March of last year? So for what it's worth, you know, I try my best to make sure that all of this information is put before you, so that ultimately you will know that there's always more than one side to every story. And as much as possible, we try our best to get as many shades of opinion to you as we possibly can. I think we are at that stage in the program where it wouldn't really make sense pulling up another call, Dennis, because we are now in the home stretch with about, 3 minutes or so to go before the end of the program. So I really want to thank you all for participating. This is a very difficult period for all of us as a country. We are in a period of great uncertainty and great difficulty. There are many, many people who are hurting. Those who are not hurting from the coronavirus in a direct way, they're hurting indirectly because of what is happening to the Barbados economy. And we've been through a long period like this. Ultimately, we are not going to solve the problem by panicking. We're not going to solve the problem by beating up on one another. But by trying our best to get the best out of everybody, indicate where things may be going wrong, where we think we can have an improvement in the situation, and by pulling together as a people. And yes, it's going to be important for our leaders to recognize that they can pull wool over our eyes, and that we want them to be straight with us on where we are and what needs to be done. And that's not just the person who is the prime minister of the country, but this is relevant to all of the people who make up the leadership of Barbados. And that includes the people in the social partnership. Because truth be told, we are at this stage now where we have a lot of people in key positions, but we only hear from a handful of them about the situation. And it is as if we are all covered by COVID, but the rest of the business of this country still has to go on. And so I think it's important to signal that people also want those who are in other positions to tell us what is going on in their areas, because we got to move beyond COVID as well. And while one group of people may be hard at work on that, we got to be convinced that the other group is also hard at work planning for the future, the post-COVID future. All right. So thank you all very much. Do have a great afternoon and a pleasant weekend.